This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, A Pirate's Life for Me, Myths, Stories and Crime on the High Seas.
Yar, har, fiddle-dee-dee.
Is that a semi-Irish pirate?
No, it's
or a semi-South pirate.
It's the song. I'm just copying it.
I mean, yo
offense.
Pirate's life for me.
A pirate's life for me.
I'm pretty sure that's the only line anyone actually knows. Seriously, can you think of any more lyrics?
No, none.
That's what I thought.
The other one is the one at the end of Pirates of the Caribbean where he just goes, "I'm really bad eggs. Drink up, my heart is yo ho," and that's the only bit of the song that anyone knows. Anyway, we're not here to sing pirate songs, though we could do that.
Well, pirate lines, basically. Can you call it a song if there's like one line?
Look, we're trying, okay? Jeez, don't be so judgmental. No, we're here to talk about pirates in general. Now, I think, first of all, the first thing that we need to establish for all of our listeners is we are not condoning piracy.
No, of any kind. We're not actually talking about piracy in its modern incarnation, whereby people use semi-automatic weapons or they download content illegally and copy it and distribute it.
Yeah, those are obviously rather different ends of the spectrum in terms of piracy.
Well, yeah.
Taking over ships, semi-automatic weapons, watching, you know, bootlegging Black Panther.
Either way, we don't condone either of those things. We're looking at the more historical pirates, and probably because of speculative fiction that we'll dive into, we're mostly looking at 18th and 17th century piracy.
Yes. Now, I think piracy was probably has been romanticized in much the same way that the whole cowboys have been. And it's, I'm not going to say it's propaganda, because it's not propaganda. It was just romanticized. And that romantic imagery is definitely the one which has stayed with us. And interestingly enough, both the positives and the negatives, which are applied to pirates very often in fiction, are untrue, or rather they are overemphasized, and don't actually look at the facts of what being a pirate was actually like. And actually, you know, we say pirate, but it also depends on which side you're on. For instance, Sir Walter Raleigh, English hero, I say English hero, he was a pirate for the Spanish ships because they kept ransacking them.
Yeah.
But he was not considered a pirate by Queen Elizabeth. And then James I came along, and I think it was James I who had him choppy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that James? Yeah.
I suppose that's the thing. There is a distinction between piracy and privateering, or being a free corsair. And the distinction is that a privateer is a private person or ship that engages in maritime warfare under commission of war. The commission or letter of marque empowers the person it describes to carry on all forms of hostility at sea. And it's obviously very beneficial if you have skilled seamen. Skilled seamen, that's even worse. Okay, if you have somebody who's good with a boat or a ship, good at raiding other ships. I've totally lost the thread of this. Basically, Sir Walter Raleigh was a great advantage because he brought back lots of Spanish gold and plunder, and also saw off quite a lot of enemy ships. Spain was quite interested in invading England during several periods of Elizabeth's reign.
Yes.
Which culminated with, obviously, the Spanish Armada, which we won't go into just now. But yeah, basically, that's the difference between piracy and privateering. Piracy tends not to benefit the state and is not condoned by the monarch.
No. So, first of all, let's just establish some general truths about pirates. Now, quite a few pirates probably actually had a naval upbringing.
I'm very familiar with ships, because you can't have somebody on the ship who isn't able to pull their weight.
Yeah, obviously. Also, this image of them being sloppy and drunk and things like that is, you know, logically has to be inaccurate. Because, again, if you're on a ship... That's life or death, pretty much every moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, they might well have been sloppy and drunk when they were on shore leave.
Yeah.
You know, but it's absolutely quite hard to drown on dry land, and it's quite hard to, you know, ground a ship on dry land when you're...
Not on the ship.
When you're not actually on the ship, so...
Yeah. But pirates were incredibly regimented. They had to be. Some of them will have actually come from the Navy itself. You know, a few people would have gone over. They would have all had, you know, some upbringing or would have been brought up on ships. They had a bedtime, which they had to go to. They had a strict regiment, which they had to stick to. And they were kind of democratic.
Yeah, I mean, I've read the alleged Pirates Code, and I can think of about three instances on there which are clearly a case of actually that rule didn't get obeyed. But yeah, generally they were quite democratic. You did have a captain, you had to have a captain and a first mate and some kind of hierarchy. But it wasn't quite like the Navy in the sense of the captain was God on the floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
Generally everybody had a voice, and once you'd proved your worth, then you were considered an equal amongst your fellow crew members.
Yeah. Plunder was also divided equally.
Yeah.
Obviously with some being taken for the to care for the ship. They did have very harsh punishments. But this was in order to enforce law, or their pirate law and their rules. And these rules were put in place to protect everybody, and to make sure that the ship kept going. So this idea of this, you know, this band of incompetent, and I'm not going to say they weren't violent. There have been some very, very, very violent pirates out there, but the idea that they were all psychopaths as well isn't correct.
Or the idea that they got into it just because they happened to be into violence is also incorrect. I mean, I'm sure it did attract a certain number of people like that, but in some cases it was that or starve to death. In some cases it was a case of, no, there are things in my life I want that I cannot get by actually living within the agreed societal laws.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean like plunder and things. It means a genuinely mean a way of life. And I suppose if you're going to have somebody who perhaps gets unfairly, dishonorably discharged from the Navy or something like that, and they love the sea, that there has to be another way back. So it would have been quite an attractive lifestyle in that respect. Or if, for example, you are a woman and you don't like... You don't like the strictures you're forced to live under during the 17th and 18th century. While there weren't, it was mostly a male profession, like most professions were during those centuries, because you weren't allowed to do a lot if you're a woman. But there were still plenty of female pirates, despite the fact that one of the pirate laws was that you shall let no young boy or woman onto the ship. We know that was broken.
We know it was.
I mean, it's okay. Sometimes the women were in disguise. They disguised themselves as youths or young men or possibly slightly older men if they were very successful. And sometimes they were just women who were using male names because people were fine with them working on board the ship. Not everybody was massively superstitious about women on ships being bad luck. But they weren't legally allowed to sign the ship's contract. So they tended to sign up with a male name.
I just like that. It's just someone who's very clearly a woman. Oh, that's Bob.
Yeah, literally, Bob. It was very Blackadder. I kind of wish they'd done a Blackadder set on the high seas, actually. Because they could have brought Bob back. It's like, Bob. It's like, Kate. Yeah, it's short for Bob. Okay. Perfect. Yeah, so I'm not saying that there were hundreds and hundreds of female pirates or crew people, although we don't know, because if they signed up with male names and nobody ever corrected the record, and that was literally the only written record, how would you know?
Yeah, well, they could very well have been pirate ships, which were just completely, were all women.
Well, yeah, it might have been like Terry Pratchett's Monstrous Regiment, where you get to the end and you're like, is there actually any men in this at all? Yes, we're all men. Are you? Anyway,
yeah, I like that. so there we go. Let's lay that out there. Now let's completely abandon it and look at the romanticized pirates.
Yeah, and you know where this has come from originally?
Treasure Island.
Yep, it's Robert Louis Stevenson's fault. He gave us Long John Silver, one of the most well-known and enduring figures of fictional piracy. And thereafter, all pirates had parrots and wooden legs and eye patches and spoke with a West Country accent. And we're not saying, I'm not shitting on the book, because it's quite a good story and you can't help but feel quite sympathetic towards Long John Silver, to be honest.
Yeah.
The whole thing's like, it's a great adventure story, but yeah, obviously not all pirates were like that, but it was such an enduring pirate image, and then other people wrote books and they based it on that, and then you had things like Captain Hook in Peter Pan, where it clearly is a riff off of Treasure Island.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have absolutely shaped the way that we interpret pirate stories. It was defining, and you can totally understand why, because in terms of adventure, in terms of imagery, and you know, Treasure Island sticks with you. It's actually, you know, very iconic, and for the, you know, for the stories that we were getting of the day, I mean, you can totally understand why it captured people's imaginations.
Yeah, definitely.
As you say, Long John Silver is a very, very, he's a clear character in that you have these wonderful descriptions of him with the wooden leg, and the missing hand and the parrot and things like that. And it's fantastic. Because, you know, there are some elements which you can be like, yeah, I can actually kind of understand why he has a parrot. You have the whole West Indies Trading Company at the time and you know, sorry, the East India. What was it called? Bastards.
I think you mean the East India Trading Company.
There we go. The East India Trading Company. They're not very nice people. British, of course.
And Dutch and French.
And Dutch and French, yeah. White, of course. You know what I mean. So you had them, and you had this kind of this empire extending and all these exotic little things coming through. So the parrot is an excellent example of that. Because I think previously up to that point, seeing a parrot, it would have been, you know, an exotic creature.
Yeah, they got to the point, I think, where if you were very rich, I mean, it was an 18th, 19th century fashion for women to have very, very bright feathers on their hats. Mm. But, I mean, as you say, back when Treasure Island was set, it was definitely that's a most unusual brightly coloured bird here in Cornwall kind of thing.
Yeah. And so this imagery, you know, he's just strange in every kind of sense, but very iconic, very easy to imagine. And the parrot itself just speaks of travel and adventure and things like that. Just having that as a pet, as something commonplace. You know, it says so much. There's so much context that can be applied. And the fact that he's missing limbs but is still captain, you know, this is someone who's literally seen the wars and is still scrambled up on top and is absolutely feared. You know, it's fantastic. You just can't help but fall in love with that image, even if, you know, you don't necessarily love the character.
No, I mean, he is a rat ultimately, but he in the sort of person he is, but he's very charismatic, weirdly so, for someone who potentially could be so physically repulsive.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, a bit frightening, particularly for a young lad, which yeah. Jim is at the beginning of the book.
And yet, despite that, he becomes quite fatherly toward Jim as well.
Yeah, it's a complicated relationship. He's not obviously above using him. He's not above using anybody. But at the same time, he's quite fond of him. And Jim obviously has quite a conflicted sense of being fond of him in return. And
yeah. And it is really interesting because we get this very nice scenario of he's not an anti-hero, but he's not really completely a villain. He's a sympathetic villain, to be sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think this is where we also get that very kind of that grey morality of piracy that has become so popular in fiction, which is the I'm not a bad person, I just don't conform to the laws, but I have my own code of conduct, and I do care about certain things. And I think that has been a heavy influence. Okay, so you mentioned Captain Hook. Let's jump over to Captain Hook next.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, actually, that before that, I just want to mention Black Sails. Have you ever watched any of it? No, I've never watched any of that. Just because we were talking about Long John Silver. So Black Sails is actually the prequel before Long John Silver becomes captain.
Yeah.
And it kind of follows his adventure, and it follows the adventure of Flint, Captain Flint, I think that's his name.
Yeah.
Who is ultimately who the parrot is named after.
That's brilliant.
It shows their relationship and the way they grow up. And again, very violent. Flint is a very interesting character. He's definitely not someone you'd probably really want to meet, but he has very interesting motivations. And he is literally just going to war because the two people he loved, who he was in a kind of a poly relationship with, it's great, but they were killed. And it's great because it was also, someone pointed out that Black Sails was this very boys will be boys, very boyish kind of series. And then by the end, everybody's gay. It's like, haha, we tricked you into consuming queer content. And I actually, you know, I felt that they did make an important point, which is that as well as being separated from other legal aspects, it's entirely possible that piracy would, there were a lot of queer people who would have successfully sort of orientated themselves within a pirate community.
In fact, since you've hit that bit, I've got this down for a bit later, but I'm going to bring it up now. If you heard the term matelage, from the French word matelot, which basically is a unique word to sort of the seafaring community. It wasn't just pirates. Sometimes this happened between sailors as well. Mm-hmm. And it was the right to identify someone as your matelot and enter into a state which was basically a common law marriage with that person. So if you died, then all your effects and your pay or whatever would go to that person. There was quite often a sexual component to this relationship as well. So it was understood that you were a couple, and that was respected. Generally, obviously, these were same-sex couples. So I don't know, obviously, if it's been said in many, many different pieces of literature, that you know, when men go to war together and form a friendship that way, then that can be an even stronger bond than sort of husband and wife type thing. And it's that sort of idea, as in you've worked together through storms, you've taken ships together, and you've just formed this really, really intense pair bond, basically, with this person. Yeah. So, I mean, this is actually a true thing. And, if you were to say, particularly among pirates, where it was a case of, well, we actually don't care for the law that much, so we don't care if being gay is illegal. What the hell does it matter? We're our own law on the ships.
Yeah.
And on the sea. So it was okay. Well, you know, if that's basically your husband, then everyone will respect that.
Yeah. So there we go. Right. Let's go over to Captain Hook. Now, as with most things in Peter Pan, these are obviously meant to be kind of the childish imaginings that one gets from literature and all put together that one played with. And, in retrospect, we can look at these things and say,
and go,
that's a bit racist.
just to get it out of the way. But I mean, if you ever played something like Cowboys and Indians as a child, which probably happened more for me, but
we used to play it all the time as kids.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, what that should really be called is colonialists and Native Americans, or pick a country kind of thing. But you don't understand that. They're the archetypal childhood characters, and you don't actually understand the underlying significance of playing that. It's like playing cops and robbers.
Yeah.
Or if you're being very vague and unimaginative, you might play goodies and baddies. Did you ever do that? It's like, I can't be bothered to think of what I really am, so I'm going to be the good guy this time around.
I am just a baddie. What have you done? Bad stuff.
Whatever. What have you got, kind of thing. That's what comes out in Peter Pan. And I understand why people have a problem with that and with aspects like the pirates in that, and the fact that they're so inept, they're basically not even pirates. I mean, they've been sailing around one island for 20 years or more.
Are they trapped? Are they literally trapped there? Is that why they haven't left?
I think they are trapped, but there is a component of that Hook won't leave until he manages to kill Peter. It's quite obsessive.
Yeah.
Because Peter obviously cut off his hand and fed it to the crocodile, which is why the crocodile now follows Captain Hook around, because he liked the taste of him and wants the rest of him.
Yeah.
And I think Captain Hook fed the clock to the crocodile so that when he heard the clock ticking, he would know that the crocodile was coming. It's quite death, really.
Yeah, that literally is. So we have to understand that these are meant to be the stereotypes that one imagines as a child. So Captain Hook is definitely fits that stereotype. And as you say, it's no coincidence that he is, like a caricature of Long John Silver. What I find kind of interesting, though, is, of course, that if we look at the way that Disney portrayed him, he's kind of like Charles the First.
Yeah, he's got that cavalier type appearance, that the gonka cloak and everything else. The coat,
Puritan,
not the cloak.
Propaganda.
Yeah, it was very much like that. The feathered hat with the ostrich plumes and
the
finery. Yeah. So and obviously in the film Hook, they've gone with the same image again as well. Yeah, it's great, but most pirates probably didn't dress like that. For one thing, it would have been bloody inconvenient.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do anything on board a ship.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I think that there was an element of... Well, they might have dressed like that if they were trying to trick someone. but yeah, because I think for the most part, pirates were obviously would mock the system as much as possible. So I don't think they'd want to adhere to it in a lot of ways, at least not while they were on boats. This is a fun fact, though. Pirates often, when they got bored, they would do fake court cases.
Yes.
They would act out fake court cases and accuse each other of piracy, which I just wonderful.
It's like the long winter evenings must have just flown by.
I love that, because that's so human. It's like, right, okay, I'm bored. Right, I am the High Court. Summon the jury. And I can just imagine one person sleeping, and the next thing they know, everyone else has grabbed them and yanked them forward. They're like, oh no, not again. Like, it's insanely human. It actually sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
So fun fact of what pirates are up to. Captain Hook is interesting, though, because again, we have this whole emphasis on their pirates, but they don't actually do anything piratey.
They live on a ship. That's literally it.
They live on a ship and they're dressed as pirates, and that's about it.
And in all fairness, the crew get quite antsy at times because they're like, well, we're pirates. Should we not be going out and pirating? You know, should we not be like setting sail for the high seas and attacking other ships? No, we're just going to keep sailing around this island until I manage to kill that boy that's cut my hand off. We're not leaving. I am captain. Also, as an aside, Hook, what was his name before he was Captain Hook? Or what did his parents call him Hook in a weird, weird sort of like wave of prescience? It's like, oh, he's going to lose a hand and replace it with a hook. We're going to call him Hook, you know, save him a lot of trouble changing his name later.
I mean, we've had the same query with Lupin. Werewolf McWill.
I mean, at least they tried to disguise it a little bit, because if you didn't read classic literature, you wouldn't know. But Hook? Seriously?
Well, it's like Scar from The Lion King.
Yeah. Well, I suppose he could have got the scar as a cub. And it's like, we're not going to name you until you do something distinguishing to your face.
Well, we're going to name your brother King, and he will be nameless until... that's great. That's good fun. yeah. Interestingly enough, of course, you get Hook appears in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. Which I never got further than two episodes, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and that's fair. I've not watched some of the later stuff, but I did actually like the way they did Hook in Once Upon a Time, in that they really changed the story around, where Peter Pan is a bad suit system, because Peter Pan is one creepy little cretin. I'm going to put that out there. Like, I loved him as a kid, but in retrospect, there is something devilishly fey and weird about him. And he could very easily be a villain. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with Hook is that originally he and his brother were part of the Navy. I think his brother was named Liam, and his name was Killian, and he was Killian Jones.
Right.
And they accidentally end up on the island, and they can't escape. They've been sent there, and they can't escape. And Liam gets poisoned, and is given a cure. Peter Pan offers them a cure, but basically says, "But now you must stay here. You must serve me." They try to escape, and the moment they leave, Liam dies immediately. So Killian takes over the ship, he returns, and he gets trapped in Neverland. And that's why that's also when his hand gets cut off, maybe he gets poisoned, and then I don't know. All I know is that he gets stuck in Neverland, and that's why he's after Peter Pan, because they literally can't leave until he's killed him. And then he becomes an alcoholic, and he's not very nice, because he's kind of bitter, and he becomes a bad person, and he's very self-serving. And then he gets a nice redemption arc, and he kind of remembers who he is a little bit more, which is nice, because I actually kind of like Killian Jones. He's an interesting character. So it was actually quite interesting to sort of look at it from the other perspective and just say, just had a sailor who was just running around, and you wonder actually whether were they really pirates, or were they just on a boat, and Peter Pan was like, well, you're pirates, and they're like, no, we're just part of the choppy choppy, you're pirates, and they really don't have a choice in the matter, since Peter has weird control over the whole of Neverland.
Yeah, although maybe they were being really, really uber clever, and I might be projecting a bit here, But under maritime law, mm-hmm. uncharted waters are considered no man's land. So if you're sailing on what's basically no man's land, you're not sailing under any jurisdiction. So you're not sailing under like the Navy or the Crown or anything like that. So mm-hmm. technically you're pirates by default.
Right. But it would totally make sense if actually, what if Hook was actually a king? That's why he's dressed like that. And he was on his ship. And he's like, well, you're pirates. What? No, wait, I'm... Sorry, I'm just putting that out there. Because
yeah.
otherwise I'm pretty sure I have no idea why it isn't that the rest of Hook's ship haven't just gone, right, you know what, we're going to mutiny because really, we've been trapped here.
We've been trapped here for years. I'll never see my sweet Marie again. Yeah, and you would. It's like, let's put him in the longboat and set him on the island and then leave kind of thing.
You can catch your boy from foot.
You might do better on foot, in fact. But the crocodile.
Climb a mountain, he won't follow you.
The delightful plot holes in Peter Pan.
But then, yeah, that's the point, is that it's just meant to be a child's projection. Sorry. It's just meant to be a child's projection. And that is precisely what the pirates are. They are... not they are so gloriously inaccurate, but they are also 100% the image of a pirate that is so unmistakable.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite possibly where the walking of the plank thing came from as well.
Yeah, because the whole walking the plank thing, I mean, why would you bother setting up a plank?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's kind of like, why would you set up a fake court? It's like, it's entertainment watching them, like, inch out blindfolded? I don't know.
Maybe.
But they already had pretty unpleasant punishments. So did the Navy, like keel-hauling people, for example, or flogging. So it seems a little bit redundant.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly the whole walking the plank thing was definitely used in Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Because the whole point being, there's no point making Peter Pan walk the plank because he just flies. So it's like, nice try, but he's not going to drown.
For God's sake, just shoot him.
Oh, but that would make sense. Anyway, just to come away from fictional pirates for a moment, pirates have had a massive resurgence in literature and film recently, and I keep seeing people on Goodreads, which, you know, apparently is where I hang out in my spare time, commenting on books about pirates, fictional pirates, and saying things like, I would have actually liked the book if it hadn't been about pirates, but I can't support something that's going to glorify someone who would have been a rapist and murderer, etc., etc. And as we've said, yeah, not all of them were like that. Some of them were just people who wanted to live outside the dictates of the accepted society and law. Yeah, there would have been some, but to be honest, there would have been rapists and murderers inside the law as well. But I will make a point of saying that amongst the pirates who plagued the Cornish coast, at least, and in other places as well, their main focus for piracy wasn't attacking other ships initially. It was to take and kidnap favourites of local towns and villages and then hold them to ransom. So the town or village would then have to club together to get enough money to ransom the person back. And if they couldn't, then that particular person met with quite an unfortunate end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of it was to do with kidnapping. Sometimes they just killed the person they kidnapped. Things started to get a bit too hot for them. Sometimes they sold them into slavery. Pirates were quite big on kidnapping people from Cornwall and the coast around that area and then selling them as white slaves off in the Caribbean or other places. Sometimes they were sold as slaves in, you know, they didn't go very far afield at all. They just went and sold them in France. Because while we abolished slavery over here relatively early, we abolished it in the late 18th century, thanks to William Wilberforce. And then we were all shocked that the rest of the world was still employing slavery and that pirates were like, well, it's a supply and demand thing and there are plenty of white slaves to go around as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that went on. And the rest of Europe was still sort of like, yeah, we think slaves are okay. And we're not, you know, we're not fussed about where you get them from either.
Amazing.
So,
by which I mean disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely disgusting. But it was a way of making money. And that's really what piracy was about.
Yeah. But yeah, again, the important distinction is that the kind of behaviour that pirates were engaging in, it wasn't exclusive to pirates. It was pretty much everybody. Everybody was an asshole.
No, and let's be clear here. While pirates were all the way through sort of the 16th, 17th and 18th century, kidnapping people from Cornwall and other parts of Britain that were accessed by coast and selling them off as slaves or holding them for ransom, the British were over in Ireland kidnapping people from their villages in great numbers and sending them off to the Caribbean to work plantations. So, as slaves.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody is actually in the right here.
Yeah, definitely not. And I think it's very important to make a distinction between piracy in literature and piracy in real life, just as it's a very, just as police dramas are obviously not genuine reflections of what police procedure is genuinely like.
No, there are obviously varying degrees of accuracy in portrayals in literature and film, but it just surprised me that so many people had this knee-jerk reaction to, oh, it's about pirates, it may as well be about paedophiles kind of thing. It's like, go and check your historical facts a little bit.
Yeah, it's not. And I mean, fair enough, you don't want to read that, that's absolutely fine, but you do require a little bit more context, and it's okay to because I think it's also a very different thing in that pirates don't exist in that way anymore.
No.
We have a very different kind of pirate now. Very, very different. And reading romanticized literature about pirates of the day is not going to condone anything. Any more than the way that we learn history condones, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you like reading about Robin Hood or Hereward or, you know, various other, basically they're bandits.
Yeah.
That doesn't
They were land that, pirates.
Yeah, that's literally what they were. But that doesn't mean that you condone carjackers. So, you know, it's not quite the same thing. You do need to think about the context of the time it's set in.
Yeah. I mean, I like Game of Thrones, but, you know, I don't condone, you know, dictatorships.
No.
Anyway, the point is that it's not quite the same. And I think before anything else, we're probably better off questioning the romanticization of British history and some of the figures in British history before romanticizing an actual genuine occupation. Like, unless you're taking a genuine character, a genuine pirate, and romanticizing their story, in which case, actually, to be honest, fine, but I can also understand someone who says, I don't want to read this. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I really don't think it's any different to, say, romanticising a highwayman, or, you know, because while they weren't, basically, if you're reading about somebody who makes their living by stealing other people's shit, then by definition they're not the most morally upstanding person, and that's okay. They can still be a great figure in literature or film.
Yeah, and just by reading it you are not condoning it. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So back to fictional pirates.
Back to fictional pirates.
We got that clear.
Yeah. I think we can't really talk about fictional pirates without mentioning Captain Jack Sparrow.
No.
Now, putting to the side all of the discourse around Johnny Depp, let's not touch any of that. We're just going to look at the character of Captain Jack Sparrow. That is one hell of a good character.
Yeah, once again, drawing on the mythos pretty much started by Treasure Island, and changing it a bit, giving it a bit of a, well, this is somebody who spent their life in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And he is a sly Weasley, but
surprisingly smart.
Surprisingly smart, and his compass doesn't quite point north morally, but it's sort of a northeasterly northeasterly direction.
Yeah. I think the thing about Jack Sparrow, which they make a good point of, was that there's this implication that he did actually work within the law, and he became a pirate when he refused to deliver a slave ship.
Yeah,
and he set the slaves free, and that's how he became a pirate. So this is a character who immediately is shown to have a very a big morality. As I said, it doesn't always point exactly what we would consider to be north, but he's definitely within the chaotic good kind of category.
Yeah.
He feels very strongly about certain things, and he's kind of fallen from grace a lot. He's drinking a lot. He's lost his ship. He's not made the best decisions. But ultimately he is usually at this point looking out for number one, but he's still an incredibly interesting and very suave, character. And the other thing, when I was little, I read some of the novelizations of Child. When I was little, I read some of the novelizations of Child Jack Sparrow, which are meant to explore how he became who he is, and they're very much not in keeping with the movies, but they were fine and fun to read at the time. I bought them at Disney World or whatever, and they made an excellent observation at one point, which is the thing that Jack Sparrow values the most above gold, above anything, is his freedom.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something which is really encompassed in the character, and that he wants his ship. He loves his ship, but his ship is a symbol of his freedom. And above anything else, that's what he wants. He just wants to be able to be free to sail the sea, to find adventure, to find gold and things like that. But ultimately, the thing he cares most about is his freedom. And that makes a very, very interesting character, because it contrasts him with Barbossa, who... Barbossa proves to actually also have a tiny bit of morality in him somewhere.
Yeah.
Every now and again, it comes through. But Barbossa is driven by gold. He absolutely is driven by gold. And it's kind of the only thing which really separates them, because they're actually quite similar characters in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So it is very, very interesting. And despite, the later films being what they were, one thing I did kind of like about some of the later films was the fact that, and I haven't seen the latest one, but...
Neither have I.
was the fact that I liked seeing Barbossa and Jack Sparrow in tandem working together in one fashion or another. Simply because... just like with Flint and with Long John Silver, there's an implication of a history there, which is never really touched on. And unlike, Flint, Barbossa actually serves a purpose and is the antagonistic figure in the first movie.
Yeah.
But there is this implication that, Barbossa was his first mate.
Yeah.
They had a history. They were friends, even. And I just think that there's this really complicated relationship whereby you have to question, what did Jack do that made made everyone else mutiny? And I think the thing that Jack did was that was his priority. Freedom was his priority over gold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some interesting dynamics going on there, and which is incredible, considering this was all just based on a... on a ride, which was definitely based on Treasure Island.
Yeah, I do. It's a fun ride in the sense of, it's not really like exciting, but it's like, oh yeah, there's all these little dioramas and It's basically come and look at our cliche kind of thing, but it
Yeah.
is fun.
It is fun. It is interesting. And they really, I think the other thing that they really managed to encompass in Pirates of the Caribbean, which made it so popular, was the visuals. And they really portrayed pirates as kind of dirty as
Yes.
well. But their costumes were just fantastic. Okay, and the setting was fantastic. I mean, it was everything you want from a pirate story, wasn't it? It really, really was.
Yeah, and I think that's why you get this sort of romanticization. We're back to Treasure Island again, but it is an adventure story. There are lots of archetypal adventure story type characters, but pirates are probably the big one for the sea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're hard pressed to have a story which is kind of based on the water and not have mentions of pirates somewhere. It's pirates and mermaids.
Yeah, Pirates and Mermaids. Actually, a book that combines pirates and mermaids, To Kill a Kingdom by Alexandra Christou, which I read last year. It's kind of a reworking of A Little Mermaid, but not quite. Lyra, or Lyra, is actually a siren. She's the daughter of the sea witch, who is basically who rules the sea. There's no King Triton or anything like that. And what sirens do is obviously they sing in order to hypnotize men so that men will drop in the water, and then they take their hearts and they collect them for no other reason than they're basically trophy hunting. The sirens hate the humans hate the sirens. Lyra, being a princess, hunts only princes, but there's a limit. She's only supposed to take one heart a year, and she gets a bit greedy, and before it's her birthday, she takes the heart of another prince. And her mother is furious with her for disobeying her, for no other reason than disobeying her. It's like, kill whoever you want, but only on your prescribed day. So she turns Lyra human and takes her voice away and says, right, if you can bring me the heart of a prince, I'll turn you back into.
That's great. How dare you kill someone? In order to repay this, you must kill someone
Yeah,
else.
it wasn't the killing. It was kind of like, yeah, I don't care if you kill humans. I do care if you do it when it's. When I haven't given the order, so it's a disobedience thing. You're too greedy for too much power,
So I'm going
etc.
to give you the
etc.
opportunity to be just as greedy.
Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to make it up to me. Bring me the heart, kind of thing. So very fairy tale in that respect. She gets fished out of the water. Her mother doesn't even bother putting her on land. Her mother just turns her human and leaves her floating in the middle of the ocean. luckily, the pirate prince is passing by in his ship and fishes her out of the water. And the first thing she does on coming round, because she's almost drowned, having been turned into a human, is launch herself at him and attack him. And she can eventually. I mean, she tells a lie and says she's a survivor of shipwreck. She can speak, she just can't sing. She can't sing with that special way that a siren has of hypnotizing them. And her viewpoint on humans gets gradually changed. In all fairness, the pirate prince sort of plays up to the stereotypes of romanticized piracy, but you never see him actually doing anything very piratical.
I'm a pirate, so when was the last time you took over a ship? Ah.
But it's a great fun story. It's not like a massive insta love thing or anything. They hate each other, as in they literally try and kill each other a few times.
Excellent.
It's a very, very good book.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah, so there is going to be a deep connection. I think moving on from that, and we've had previous episodes where we looked at the sea and how the sea plays is so good for speculative fiction because there's just this element of mystery. And I think as well that that's a large part of why pirate stories are so exciting.
Yeah.
And that's because it is an interesting terrain. Not because, you have to conjure up these jungles or things like that. Everyone can imagine the sea. but you can do so much with it, you know, and there's a great capacity to involve the supernatural and to make it very eerie. I mean, can you think of anything quite as iconic as that moment where Barbossa steps out into the moonlight and goes, "You better start believing in ghost stories.
Yeah.
You're in one." Like, whew, that is good. That is some good shit. And the other one is the scene where the skeletons, they're all walking along the bottom of the ocean bed.
Yeah, and I love me some skeleton warriors.
I really do. That's fantastic. But the thing is, like, it wouldn't actually really be nearly as scary if they were walking through a town. I mean, it's still scary, definitely. But there's something very, very, you know, the connection between the weird lighting under the water, the fact that they're these bones and they're surrounded by, you know, fish and the sand and the way that everything moves slowly. It's incredibly eerie. And you also get the sense of the muffled silence as well. Yeah. And kind of the way that sound echoes or moves in water is so different and strange. It's this whole combination of stuff which just makes it wondrously creepy. And means that pirates, even in stories which are very, that don't contain speculative elements, there's always this association of the supernatural with piracy. And that's often shown in the way that they're superstitious.
Yeah, definitely.
So I really, really like that. I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about red seas under red skies.
you've got like about 5 minutes. Off
you go. This is the second book in the Gentleman Bastard sequence by Scott Lynch. Yeah, somehow Locke and Jean end up pretending to be pirates and then getting taken by real pirates and ultimately becoming real pirates as well.
Yeah, the real pirates are not fooled by their act.
Yeah, the real pirates are like, oh wow, you are bad at this. And actually, it's very interesting because Scott Lynch managed to merge some very real pirate kind of elements with some new ideas, which actually makes the pirates feel very genuine in that there's definitely the romanticized element of them, but there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that these are pirates. We see them ransacking ships, we see the captain killing people, and they're orderly and they're well, you know, they're well maintained, but they are absolutely pirates. And I love it. I really, really love it. And there was just two small things that Scott Lynch changed in the lore of the world, which is that, first of all, you had to have a cat on board, which I thought was great because it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Keeping a cat on board, making sure the rodent population is under control, absolutely. And that you had to have women on board. And that is just, it's just a small change, which a lot of people were absolutely furious about. They were like, pirates were all rapists and ravagers. There's no way they would have allowed women on board, especially women being captains on board. I'm like, okay, first of all, let's look historically at pirates where women were not technically allowed on board. We have examples of female pirate captains throughout history.
Yeah, and women who actually were in the Navy. Admittedly, people didn't know they were women, but they were there.
Yeah.
Or officially, they didn't know they were women.
Yeah, officially didn't know they were women. But that's within a law where women were not technically allowed on ships, and they certainly wouldn't have been allowed to be. I say they weren't allowed on ships. You could have women on board ships. That's ridiculous. Otherwise, they just wouldn't. They weren't allowed to be crew. But we did have women who were crew, despite that. And I very much doubt that everyone was convinced. You know, it's like, I think that probably quite a lot of people knew that there were women on board ships. They just didn't acknowledge it, if that makes sense.
Well, some ships did actually have a policy of you had the ship's woman or you had a couple of women on board ship, and that was to see to the needs of the men.
Yeah.
Which is less savoury, obviously, but that was a case of, that was something the captain the captain did and promoted, because it meant that the ship tended to run more smoothly.
Yeah. So that's in the case, as I said, of a society where we say no women. So by just literally changing a law and saying it's part of the religion, in that they thoroughly believe that their ships are safer if there are women on board, it makes perfect sense then for women to be openly captains on board. And the whole idea that they were rapists and stuff like that, I'm like, I've got to point out something, right? A lot of Roman soldiers were rapists. That doesn't mean they came back to Rome to everybody. That doesn't mean that every woman they saw, they raped. They were rapists because they were pointed at the enemy and they were told, go forth, and it was a dominating thing and they could do what they wanted. So even if you had a female captain who was captain of a bunch of rapists, they wouldn't rape the captain, oddly enough, probably because it would get them killed. Also, probably because at any given time, the captain could say, right, go and ravage that ship, and they'd have their fun. There's a big difference, and that's only if she was somehow captain of an entire boat of rapists, which, again, we've touched on that. Not entirely sure that that's 100% accurate. I don't think rape is the go-to setting that everybody, you know, switches to when law and order is taken away.
No, I mean, rapists tend to be rapists because they're rapists. They don't tend to be rapists because they're pirates. It's not a case of, oh, well, I used to be in the Navy, but I always behaved myself there. And it's like, well, if you were in the Navy, there's a chance that you might have, if you were a rapist, still have been a rapist in the Navy, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It had little to do with your job. Some jobs just made it easier than others.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, anyway, the point is that I really loved the way that that was done in Red Seas Under Red Skies. Because I did feel like they were accurate pirates. They weren't good people, but they weren't bad people. And it did show that, you know, there were two sides to it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So, there we go. Before we go then, so who's your favourite pirate of all time?
Oh, I didn't get to talk about this one, so I'm going to say. It's only barely touched on, but obviously we're going with fictional pirates, presumably.
Yeah.
Then it would be the Dread Pirate Roberts from A Princess Bride. Even though the Dread Pirate Roberts, spoilers guys, is actually kind of an assumed identity, it's an archetype. Nobody stays, the idea is that the Dread Pirate Roberts trains up a successor, once he becomes fabulously wealthy, and then hands off the role so that basically everyone thinks the Dread Pirate Roberts is still there, so the legend lives on, and then the next one does the same thing again, and so on and so forth.
Fantastic.
But I especially liked it in The Princess Bride, because Wesley as the Dread Pirate Roberts was just brilliant. I mean, he starts off as this quite mealy-mouthed farm boy and says, oh, I want to marry Buttercup, but I must go off and make my fortune. And then his ship gets taken by pirates. He begs for his life, not because of anything other than not for money or anything else, but just because he doesn't want to leave the woman he loves. He doesn't want to die and not ever see her again. And that captures that particular Captain Roberts's attention, and he trains him up to be the next Dread Pirate Roberts, retires. Unfortunately, it does mean that Wesley is assumed dead for 5 years, which causes all sorts of problems. But you'll just have to watch the film or read the book if you haven't. But yeah, no, it's just because I love the idea of this inherited role and legend being handed down. I mean, can you imagine if there'd been lots and lots of Robin Hoods and they'd all trained each other all the way down? It's basically that.
There's a story in there.
Yes. And you?
Oh, God, it's really hard to say. I mean, at the end of the day, I think Captain Jack Sparrow is always going to have a hold a very high position. I do like Captain Shakespeare from, oh God, what's it called?
I don't know, it's ringing a bell, but...
With the star.
Oh, Stardust.
Stardust, there we go.
No, he was really, that was very cool. Air Pirate.
Yeah, Air Pirate, yeah. I like him. I kind of like Mal Reynolds. He's technically a pirate. Well, they're smugglers, aren't they? They're
space cowboy, really.
Space cowboy, really, yeah.
Maybe we'll do cowboys in the future.
I just think there's a lot of potential there. I didn't really mention One Piece, which is an entire manga where everybody's a pirate. Like, there are a lot of pirates. And I think pirate is only held in a very loose kind of term. If you're a pirate, you're just not with the Navy. So they have good pirates and bad pirates, which I don't quite understand. But anyway, regardless.
Okay.
I kind of like some of the pirates from One Piece as well. So, okay. Well, before we go, it's time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And Jules, I believe you've got one for us.
Yes, I'm currently reading Seanan McGuire's... the book title went out of my head. Sparrow Hill Road, which is about a hitchhiking ghost. So everything's told from the ghost's perspective. Her name is Rose Marshall. She died back in 1952. And she's made various appearances all over the next 50 or 60 years. Because, you know, she died at 15 and she never will grow up now. She's just stuck walking the ghost roads, hitchhiking, and either helping people to their deaths or preventing them if she can. And she's just a really great, engaging character. Quite cynical, as you would be if you died back when you were 15. And you get to watch the world going on and on. And it, just like everything Seanan McGuire writes, it's intelligent and funny, and there's lots of little references in there, and it's quite dark as well, so I like that.
Fantastic. Okay, well, on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.